Hi, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. I'm here with Jordan Shaheen, Head of Revenue and Strategy Operations at Candid. Thank you for coming today, Jordan. Tell me a little bit about yourself, your background, and your current role at Candid.
Sure, happy to. I have been at my current organization for about 6 years. Started in kind of a customer operations gopher role. We were about 20 of us working in a two-bedroom apartment in Manhattan here in New York. So it was the extreme startup experience. We were doing direct-to-consumer clear aligners at the time. Think of Invisalign or clear braces, kind of whatever strikes the mind, which was great. Super passionate about it. We try to increase economic and geographic accessibility to orthodontics, which is very important for long-term health, diabetes, Alzheimer's, pregnancy risk, you know, liver disease, kidney disease, but can be impacted significantly by the mouse biome. So it was something I was super passionate about at the time, and really just became a builder and always wanted to do different things. So I started doing customer operations, helped build out the inpatient experience. I then moved on and moved to Columbus, Ohio for a year and helped build out our secondary headquarters there, which at the time I think grew to about 200, 250 people, and had everything from part of our lab processing team there. It had our insurance team support, sales team, a whole variety of other operational teams. And so that was really exciting. I moved back to New York and joined what at the time was kind of just the strategy team. I spent 6 months. We wanted to go in network with dental insurance carriers. In order to do that, you have to have dental professional entities in every state. So I spent 6 months building out almost 50 professional corporations across the US, which is about as boring as it sounds, I can promise you. And then after that, I moved and started working with one of our co-founders on a B2B sub project that the two of us just kind of ran with right before the pandemic and in the early pandemic. And then about midway through the pandemic, it had grown enough and we saw enough potential in it that we actually shifted the entire business from a direct-to-consumer model over to the business-to-business model that we had built. And so that's been really cool. Since then, I've worked in managing the sales operations teams, enablement, marketing operations, plus our true revenue operations side. And over the last 6 months to a year, have moved more into a revenue strategy side where we're leading some of the larger projects, the initiatives, incremental growth, and I've got a small team, but a very, very successful and reliable team that I love working with every day. And so that's kind of how I backed into revenue operations over the years.
Wow. I mean, that is quite an operational background. I mean, when you think about people who get into revenue operations, there's never one clear path, right? Everybody's path is different. So I'd imagine just from, you know, moving into, you know, creating different markets and standing up operations and everything, you have a lot of that kind of problem finder, problem solver kind of abilities. So that's an exciting story. I noticed on your in your background that you report to the chief of staff at your organization.
Yeah. So up until recently, I did. I've switched over same role basically, but working directly with our chief experience officer, which is kind of a misnomer in his name. I always kid him about that because he is really the chief of a lot of things officer. And so he leads a lot of our strategy and incremental revenue initiatives and general stuff. He's actually one of the few people who's been there almost as long as I have. He'll approach his 6 year mark very shortly. So yeah, he's been around for a while and it's been fun. Second time I'm working for him actually. So excited to be working with him as well. Chief of staff was awesome too. Jeff Pond, excited to have him, but yeah, I've had, I think 11 or 12 managers over the 6 years.
Wow.
I've been here. So I've had a lot of people, I've learned from a lot of people, but I try to just go with the flow wherever I fall in the org.
Yeah, I mean, that's great, too, because you're making those relationships. And, you know, in a RevOps world, that's critical to what we do. I think the reason I asked you is it's not reporting up to the traditional, you know, CRO. So maybe if you can give me some perspective to how you think that's, you know, if that's valuable or create some challenges or, you know, kind of how do you approach that since you're not directly necessarily aligned with the sales teams?
Yeah, so we do have a VP of sales who is a few months into working in Canada. We have had them before. She's great and does a really good job. We have a sales operations person that we have kind of created to be in her realm. Mm-hmm. But I have been adamant for a long time, not just with her, but previously, that we should never roll up into the sales part of the org. And the reason I say that is for me and my team to be effective, we have to be able to give unbiased opinions on things and truly make recommendations based on the patterns that we're able to locate, whether it be in the data and qualitative feedback from the reps, frontline, executive, whatever it might be. And so in order for that to not become a, okay, we'll listen to you if it's a sales-minded thing, because even the best sales leader will subconsciously lean towards these sales the thing that benefits the sales teams the most. And so for that reason, I've tried to stay out of that org, working in parallel with them very, 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 very closely as if we're on the same team. But I do think it's really important, at least for my goals at our company and what I like my team to do, to try and stay one step removed so we can really think through things, be a successful consultant and give people the recommendations, whether it be an executive, frontline rep, or the VP of sales, something that I think will value, will give them value and add to the org, but it sets a little bit of that cognitive dissonance between the two things.
I think that's an important point, because even in organizations where your RevOps is rolling up to the chief revenue officer, that means something different in every organization, right? So in a lot of cases, it's just sales maybe, or sales and customer success and marketing is its own entity, or if it's sales and marketing and then maybe customer success or client care, whatever, lives somewhere else. So there's always challenges when you're, you know, kind of sitting under there, because inevitably it's not perfectly set up like in the world of the perfect revenue operations organization that we all think should exist. And you also raise an important point about just checks and balances, right? Especially when it comes to comp plans. I know I deal with that. It's like, well, yeah, should we pay on this or shouldn't we pay on this? It's like, well, of course you're going to say, yes, we should pay on it because it rolled up to you and affects you. So, you know, I'm always trying to do my due diligence with, you know, using finance as kind of the third party, deal breaker on things. So, being one step removed definitely has some advantages and also disadvantages as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, it definitely does. And we've rolled up to different orgs or different people over the time here. We haven't had a chief revenue officer in quite some time as we got into the B2B world, mm-hmm. especially as sales was changing, because we had a sales team that was either in our studios, selling directly to patients day to day, you know, hourly employees, or we had the remote team that was calling patients and trying to get them to purchase the product. And now we have people, reps in cities, physically boots on the ground, as well as the other. So, you know, we've had so many sales teams iterations that it's given us also a little bit more consistency, kind of staying in a slightly separate silo. Not silo, I shouldn't say, because that makes it separate, but a slightly different vertical that then dotted lines into a lot of different people.
Right, right. And then you're also, to your point, touching in the B2B and B2C space. So you're really operating in different worlds there as well. So how this brings me to something that you and I were chatting about, this whole idea in revenue operations of really trying to be proactive versus reactive. And I'd love to, I know you have some opinions and some thoughts and strategies on this, so I'd love to dive into that.
Yeah, happy to. I think for me, especially in my role, as I kind of talked through being a little bit removed from the sales team to make sure we're giving that strategy, I try to make sure that my team is constantly adding incremental revenue. And in order to do that, you have to think ahead. You have to think about new products, think about more efficient ways for the sales team or the org to operate. And that's why I tend to lean towards the proactive side. I think reactive is important. You know, sales ops in my mind does a little bit more of the reactive, helping support the day-to-day, helping, create those spur of the moment reports, helping ensure that the frontline sales team has everything they need, commissions, all that stuff. And then our team is able to kind of build on top of that, support that in certain ways, but also really think about how can we benefit the sales team? How can we make them more effective at their job? And hopefully prevent them from having frustrations in the future, as opposed to, you know, dealing with those frustrations as they arise.
Definitely. And you know, there is always a reactive element. I mean, you know, just as you mentioned, if there's a challenge that impacts the pipeline or impacts a deal or their commissions, like those things rise to the top.
Yeah.
So how do you manage that with, you know, in a larger organization? How do you manage the, you know, the requests that come in and try to stay focused in being proactive? How do you manage that with your team?
Yeah, I think it's definitely more an art than a science to some extent. I think there isn't a firm, you know, there's not a formula I can, you know, say that works every time for us or works for everyone. But I think what we've found successful is making sure that we constantly understand our priorities and have bandwidth and capacity available to take on sub projects, one-off things, things that we can help with. To be honest, we have as many one-off asks coming from the front line and sales as we do the executive team. So there really isn't any one team that is responsible for all of the, you know, random things. We try to support those to the best of our ability, but also just be very upfront about, hey, here's this big incremental revenue thing that we have tasked, the board has tasked, our executive council has tasked on us focusing. And so we try to balance that. We've also, as I said, recently brought on a new sales operations senior associate who's going to be great in helping us handle some of the business as usual items. But again, it comes down to priorities. It comes down to communication is the biggest thing. I try to set expectations. If you ask me for something and I know it's going to take a couple of days, I'm not going to say I'm going to get right on it. I'm going to say it's going to take a couple of days. And sometimes you'll find out how important things are. I have definitely some executives who will ask for something in such terms that it makes it seem like it's due in the next hour. And if you push back a little bit and ask the urgency, they're like, oh, yeah, you can get that done in a few days. So I think sometimes revenue operations and people generalists in general feel like there's this urgency to everything that's asked to them. But if you actually take a step back, sometimes things can prioritize themselves if you just ask.
Right. Yeah. Like when do you need this by, you know, is it like, as if it's for the board deck, then right. That, you know, that goes right to the top. Yeah. That's like yesterday. Right.
Exactly.
Totally get that. I think it's important just from a lot of folks listening, maybe wondering, you know, are you using any sort of a tool to, you know, receive the request from your team, like a form or something like that, so you can organize and prioritize?
Yeah. So for the historically for us on the sales side and auxiliary teams around that, we have had a form that we've asked, you know, submit, that it goes through things like urgency. It goes through ideal deadlines, the ask, the details, why it's important. For what it's worth, 90% of people say it's the top urgency because that's just how people operate. But it makes them feel good to type that. I think now we've moved into a position where we're very open about, here's the 70% project that I'm on. And if you have little things that come up, send them over in whatever way is convenient will help. Because moving to a field sales team, they're working from their phone a lot. Mm. They're, you know, going office to office. They're in offices 9 hours a day some days, right? 9, 10 hours. And so we want to make it as easy as possible for them. And so whether it's feedback sessions we have scheduled, whether it's working every week with what we would call the strategic revenue team, including sales, our chief experience officer, some of our revenue operations, revenue strategy leaders. And we try to keep that open line of communication. But I will say now we're actually less structured in the form because we have clearer marching orders that we're able to work and then just know we're going to have a certain amount of time for one-off asks that come from everyone. Because I want to make sure we support the rep that is confused in the field and has this weird ask that their area sales director doesn't know. And if that means they're going to call me, then fine, I'm happy to help them. And again, if it's something that someone else can help with, I'm also not afraid to say, hey, this person is probably better positioned to do this faster than I am. Why don't you reach out to them? So of the things that we get as a team, 50% are things that we do, 50%, you know, 40% are things that we say, hey, this person's better off to help you. And 10% kind of just get explained of why they're not necessarily relevant or important to do at all. So it really just depends. But again, we try to be very user focused and making sure that we're supporting people in whatever place they find themselves, while also being very upfront about the amount of time that we have for those one-off,
right,
you know, here and there asks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great, especially if they're actually driving around the car from meeting to meeting to meeting, and they're real quick trying to ping you on something. It's like, you know, however you can do it before you go into your next call. So that's definitely huge. I want to drill down on something you said about feedback sessions. Maybe can you tell me a little bit about how you go about that, and then what do you do with the feedback?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we kind of use that design thinking loop, which is, in order to, you know, come up with an idea, a prime example is we had the idea that we wanted to have kind of sales development reps who went in and basically cold called, you know, people in the org don't always like the word cold call, but effectively cold call targeted accounts in the field and see how many demos we could get set up and then hand to our sales team. But before we did it, or before we even thought about piloting it with someone, myself, my team, our chief experience officer, and a few others, we went and served as sales development reps for a week in the field. We visited 70 plus practices. We did what we were going to ask this person to do. We wanted to understand what it was like. We wanted to make sure that what we were asking is something that is humanly capable or humanly possible. And so from there, we then created a pilot program where we brought on two sales development reps within a structure based on our experience. We then got their constant feedback over about a month before rolling it out more broadly. So that's one example. Another great example is just a few of the different tool items we've rolled out, which we constantly get. We have small, you know, feedback groups prior to launching anything. Let's make sure it's meeting the needs. Let's make sure we're not missing something obvious, because I'm most of the time sitting behind a computer. My team is most of the time sitting behind a computer. And so it's easy for us to think that something looks good in our eyes, but then practically speaking, it's not usable. And so we do that. And then post-launch is the biggest thing. I think people forget. You get the feedback before, which is important, but also once you launch it and you have a larger team using it, sometimes it's just a training issue. Sometimes it's a great point that we need to fix. And sometimes it's like a, hey, that's a phenomenal point. We can't do anything about that right now, but I'm going to keep that in our mind as we go forward. And so for me, it's both that pre and post feedback. I think if you stop taking feedback at any point, then you start to lose iterations and future benefits. That said, not everything's going to be doable, but let's collect it as much as we can, aggregate it and figure out what's doable, what we can kind of hack around, and then, you know, be honest and upfront about which things are just unfortunately not at the moment possible, whether it be technical limitations, resource limitations, capacity, you know, whatever that might be.
Yeah, continuous improvement for sure. I mean, that's so important in this job, this industry, and just the market, right? Because everything changes so quickly, and you have to be agile and flexible to accommodate and to also, you know, people bring great suggestions from the field. So being able to implement those if possible, or being realistic about it, or at least you can figure out what the root problem is, you know, driving their feedback. I want to circle back to the first point you made.
Yeah.
So you went out and got in your car and did some cold calling.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I'm just going to put that out there. So I have a sales background, and I think it'd be fun to go do that again, like go out and, like, you know, literally knocking on doors. So I think that's just amazing that you're willing to do that and to create the process that way and actually go through it, not just in theory, but in practice. And I'm sure that gives you a ton of credibility too in your org with the sales team, right? So just having that, like, hey, we went out and did this. So maybe you can just give me a little bit about what that experience was like.
Yeah, it was so in the field, we went to Tampa, so in Florida as well, during the summer. It was like 108 degrees while we were there for the whole week. It was the worst week we could have possibly picked to do it, but we got the ultimate, like, tough experience. And you know, we hit probably 10 to 12 doctors a day. As you know, with cold calling, you get some people who are super into it, some people who aren't, but we were able to test different messaging, test and track, you know, hey, when I say this way, is it better? If I come in this way, is it better? If I try to talk, you know, whatever it might be, those different operational trials that you're able to figure out, you know, where you are. But we try to do that with most things, because the truth of the matter is, unless you are doing something, it's really hard to fully empathize with it. And so we've done that. We've also worked as our sales team's role before, Again, for my team, my goal is to get them in the field at least once a month doing something, whatever person it's working with. Maybe it's even working with one of our remote folks to see what their life is like. Doing that type of work is really, really important. Again, for feedback, but also just to, I think it's easy to be like, why aren't you doing that as a rep? Mm-hmm. Or, hey, this is easy. What are you not understanding? For example, we had all of our reps had iPads for a while. And none of us had thought about in the corporate level, hey, those should probably be cellular enabled. So they're not on a hotspot. So they're not doing janky stuff. But it's something we didn't think about until we were in the field. And we're like, oh my God, why are we not doing this? And right. So then we were able to quickly do it. And I think it's things like that that you have to see firsthand. But to your point, reps also really appreciate it when you're willing to roll up your sleeves, get in the field. It builds a type of camaraderie that is really hard to create if you're always behind a computer, if you're not going to the national sales meetings, if you're not going in the field sometimes. And I think that's a really important part, especially in field sales roles, because you can't mimic in the field experience by listening to Zoom calls, by, you know, hearing sales pitches, all that, because there's really no way to know unless you're there.
Right. Yeah, that's oh my gosh, that is so huge. When I ran field sales teams, I was always out in the field with my sales reps, but we even at one point, we would do like a buddy day where we would say, hey, you know, this rep from this team, why don't you go ride, you know, spend a day with this person on this other team. And they would just share and get ideas, just even outside of their own teams and regions. And found that to be super valuable. It was great for team building and camaraderie, but it was also great for idea sharing. And they would come back with, you know, a lot of new tips and learning, like, hey, so-and-so does this after their call. And because it's just so much different than, you know, being behind the screen in like an enterprise sales where you're mostly doing your meetings on a Zoom. And then maybe you're going out for an in-person for a workshop, you know, or when you're getting closer, further down the funnel, right? So that's just great. I would imagine you have a ton of credibility in your organization. So kudos to you for doing that. And then also, I love the word janky, and you're like the only person I've ever heard say the word janky. So my husband makes fun of me for saying it. You're like my new best friend. So I know you're going to New York too, right? Aren't you going to be at the summit in New York? Yeah. Cool. Yeah. All right. We'll have to catch up and see what other words you have there. Yes. So as we, you know, what I'd like to talk about is, you know, any kind of tips. You think of the people that are maybe just trying to get into revenue operations or just really thinking about it, or maybe they're already leaders, but what are some things that, you know, you kind of live by, or some tips that you could provide to our listeners?
Yeah, I think, you know, the three things that I always think about when someone joins my team is be diligent, be curious, and be hungry. So you come in, I want you to spend that time understanding a business, the good and the bad, always going in with positive intent, which I think is really important. You see a lot of people early in their career come in, it's easy to say, why are you doing it this way, or to judge. Mm-hmm. Once I had someone come into an interview with 7 pages typed up of what we're doing wrong with our business. And it was like the quickest way to get me to not be super excited. But I think so that curiosity is really important. Diligence is also really important. When we, you know, assign something, when you're finding some issue and you're trying to fix it, it's important to make sure you check off the boxes. You understand how this is going to impact people. Obviously, to the best of your ability. I'm a move fast and break stuff kind of guy from my early startup days. So I also like just getting stuff out and iterating, but the diligence is really important. And the third piece, which you can't teach, is just being hungry. Be wanting to take on cool projects, wanting to go solve some really interesting problem. Figuring out what some interesting problem is and why, you know, some metric is the way it is. And that at least is how I've developed my career, is always willing to take on new things. In my instance, willing to move at times and figure stuff out. But I think, you know, between being curious, diligent, and hungry, that's the heart and soul of a very authentic and you know, whether successful in the moment or future success of a revenue operator.
I really love that. That is an amazing way to end this podcast. This has just been a great discussion, Jordan. I really appreciate the time that you took to spend with me today. And I look forward to seeing you soon here in a few weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. It was great to chat.
Thanks for tuning in to RevOps Unboxed. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode.